Hello, and welcome to the Social Tech Brewing Company podcast, episode number one. I'm your host, Wayne McPhail. The Social Tech Brewing Company is an organization that was formed in Vancouver in 2004. Its goal is to bring tech-minded people together for social change. I attended a meeting on April 6th in their Toronto offices called Municipal Elections 2.0. We heard from three candidates in the upcoming Toronto municipal election. And then we had speed dates with six coders and technicians who have created online tools that'll make it easier for us to become informed voters and know more about the candidates and the issues. So here are the speed dates with the six technicians, and I've included links to their websites in the show notes. So let's jump right in. Municipal Election 2.0 Tools from the Social Tech Brewing Company in Toronto.
You will each have 4 minutes to present, and I will be timing you.
I should have started over. Hi, I'm Gabe, Wireless Toronto. This is great. In this group, there are two people who are Wireless Toronto volunteers. So Wireless Toronto is a community wireless network. So we set up, we're a an all-volunteer group that sets up free public wireless internet access in public spaces and publicly accessible spaces. The first spot was this one, and we've got two routers, one of them which is in that room and another one which points in towards the front at the lobby. It started a year ago when Wi-Fi in Toronto was pretty rare. Even pay Wi-Fi was rare in Toronto at that time. And looking at the huge momentum behind the group in Montreal, which operates the same way that we do, it's essentially a model we're using, they have now set up about 90 hotspots and have over 15,000 users in Montreal. The hotspots are relatively small. They cover one or two buildings. And so we've set them up. We have 15 now in Toronto. Set up one today at a cafe in Parkdale, Rustic Cosmo. And at these hotspots, if you have a laptop or one of these things or a Wi-Fi phone, you can connect up to the network. When you open up your laptop, connect to the network, it will give you information about the place where you're at. So it's called a captive portal page. We call them community portal pages, and it allows us to essentially give people a sense of where they are. The project that I continue working on, but was working on most just prior to this, is called Murmur. It's a location-specific storytelling project. And I really fell in love with this idea of information that sits in geographic space. So that kind of led me into how can we make this work for multiple media, and how can we be delivering this kind of information to people wherever they are. Wi-Fi is one step in that direction. So when you go down to St. Lawrence Market, which is another one of our hotspots, and open up your laptop there, you'll get lots of information about what's going on in the neighborhood, information about what's going on in the market. In the future, we want to add information about community events, about art shows. We want to have connection to, for example, projects like They Work For You in the UK is really a relatively well-known project about web-enabled Hansards so that people can, so that there's a really easy to access, easily databased, essentially, which makes it easy to access when you wrap an interface around it. Information about how who your politician is, who the politician is for the place where you're at, the councillor or MP, and how they've voted, everything that they've said, to make all that information really easily accessible. So that's another thing that would be great to have as in a sort of location-based context. That's what we sort of want to do, is be bringing in the community-based information from across the internet to be displaying on these portal pages that are sort of hyper-local, location-specific. We're all volunteers. The way it works is each venue is responsible for the internet access and for buying the router, which costs about $60. And then the network membership fee, which they pay to us, is $50 a year. And that covers our costs for printing brochures and stickers and running the network. And we do promotion, so helping people find out where these hotspots are, and user support. So if someone has trouble connecting to the network, they don't need to hassle the staff at the venue, they can call us.
Okay, Vote Toronto is this is fundamentally a reportage site. The technology is simply a low-cost way of delivering relatively standard information. The critical thing that we've done that nobody else has done is that we went and got all the donation records for all the candidates, and we're going to have them all up, you know, like every record up there, so you can identify who is giving these people money. One of the things is, you know, like when we built the site, we went and started looking at this, we had an assumption that, you know, like that was going to be significant. And it is quite amazing to see your prejudices confirmed. It's real clear. Politicians that live off corporate money vote the corporate line. Politicians that live off individual donations vote for the community. This is actually an old version of the site. We are moving to a new content delivery system. And one of the things, the interesting technical thing we're going to be doing is having a database that's individually searchable, so you can ask your own questions about where are people getting their money from. We also keep track of the voting records. So these are what we have identified in a subset of the votes at City Council that we've identified as contentious, and will actually illustrate whether which side people are on. And we have identified the specific sub-vote there. So it's essentially a reportage focused on the city with a particular emphasis on financing and voting records. Those are the things that are really, really key, partly because they're just the facts, man, right? You know, like the Sergeant Joe Friday version.
Yeah, we're running a volunteer nonprofit project called Who Runs This Town. It's trying to boost civic engagement in the city, hopefully leading to a more diverse council, more people voting, and more people running. It's a website that is kind of a one-stop shop for people to find out how to run, or also who's running it now, who's signed up, what the main issues are in the city, and pretty much anything you need to know to be an engaged voter or a candidate. Part of the project is also a kind of side offshoot called City Idol. And City Idol is a competition between 100 citizens of Toronto who feel that they've got what it takes to be a city councillor. And they'll be competing in front of a live audience of 1,000 people. And once the audience chooses the winners, they'll be offered a prize of a fully staffed campaign to run for city council. So we're going to try and take our winners and get them into City Hall.
And when does that wrap up?
It's just getting off the ground. Our opening night is April 28th at the Music Hall. And there's lots of information on our website, which is whorunsthistown.to.
My name's Joe Marie, and I do a lot of work for the NDP federally, provincially, in BC, Saskatchewan, Ontario, Nova Scotia. I'm moving from doing a lot of the back-end stuff, which was amalgamating voters' lists with phone company data, with call center data, with membership information. I also do a lot of work for nonprofits. For example, in the last federal election, I helped put together the Vote for a Change campaign. It was the third largest third-party campaign. In the most recent Ontario by-elections, there were three of them, and we have here, it's a template that was used for all three of the campaigns, and so a lot of the background infrastructure can be put together once and then used in any number of campaigns. And this campaign was a winning one, it's based on Drupal, which a lot of the techies here might know a little bit about. The Green Party is using it, the NDP is using it federally and in Ontario. The Democrats in the U.S. put a lot of money into it, and it's got a lot of momentum. It is really good for bottom-up grassroots organizing using blogs. This wasn't turned on so much in this campaign because they wanted a little bit more control over the message. You'll notice that if you come back to the page, things like these endorsements and photos change and come up randomly. So that's not that exciting, but it does indicate the need for fresh content. Another thing that's a little more interesting here is that people using this tool could say why they're supporting Peter Tabbins or what they think the issue is in the campaign, and then you can see where they live in the riding, and if you go over top of them, you can find out exactly what they said. So it gives much more of a sense of the riding, and people feel really excited about seeing what they say right up on the site right away. And they can see where their neighbors are. Another nice thing about this platform is it allows you to invite people who live in your area to a coffee party or something, And the combination of online organizing with offline meetups is really important and very effective. You have to get people in face-to-face situations.
I'm Chris Nolan, .ca from Question, which is weird spelling here. And the idea behind Question is to harness the collective wisdom of the internet to predict the future. And bold, you know, fancy statement there, but there's this notion, a book came out a couple years ago, The Wisdom of Crowds, which is really making this notion popular, and at least in the geek circle on the internet. And it's that getting diverse groups of people from with lots of different personalized experience in order to answer, you know, solve a problem, you're more likely to get the correct answer than trying to find just that one expert that's going to do the right job for you. And so the idea here is take your question, put it all over the internet from, you know, so you create it, you put it on your blog, somebody else creates a different question, puts it on their blog, but you're both, say, having election-related questions or Toronto-related questions or ward-specific related questions. So those questions will start to be shared among the different sites. And so this was, I did up this election map, which is a mashup between Google Maps and Question in the back end and Elections Canada to pull in the information for, this was back at the federal election. So on each riding here is sort of geocoded to the returning station for the riding, but the you click on the point and it comes up with these sort of two default questions which I set up when I sort of created the system. Who will win and who would you like to win? So sort of get that disparity. You really want this person, but logically you know it's not going to happen in your area.
You're asking around both questions.
Yeah. And then using the riding number or the ward number in the coming sense, you can create whatever questions you want and they'll appear in this list for people. And so anybody can create those questions. And so if there's a particular issue that's important for them in that area, in it goes, and anybody that's coming to look about that area, in it goes. And so like other stuff, having these links to information about the riding at CBC and Wikipedia and Elections Canada, and having tying in with this postal code lookup that Elections Canada made available to say, okay, you know, I'm a new voter, I've never voted before, but from stuff I'm hearing in the media, I got to get involved, I got to do something, but where do I vote, that kind of thing, right? So that was the idea here, so you can actually quickly find, you know, where is my riding, what's going on, and that kind of thing. And then the neat thing too, which I thought was important in this particular sense, is the creator of the question will be able to go in and look at the history of the answers as people change their answers potentially. So if it was a hot topic, people were one way, you know, something came out in the media, something happened, there was a meeting, something, you know, whatever, and people's opinions changed. You can track that change of opinion and say, okay, is that a good thing for me, or do I have to go and try to, you know, get those people back? That kind of thing is something that I see happening.
Okay, so this thing is the location-targeted email list. So it's like any other mailing list, that except that instead of subscribing with to a topic like golf or whatever, you're subscribing to a particular location. So if you, when you subscribe, you enter your email address and postal code. And the application geocodes the latitude and longitude into a database. And when you send to the list, you can specify a location. If you're, let's say, you're running an event at a local church, you put in the postal code of the local church, and then you define a radius around which you think people will be interested, like a couple of kilometers. So everybody within that radius will get the message, but nobody outside that area will. I've been promoting this at a kind of a low level since October, and this is the subscriber map of current locations of current subscribers. And as you can see, they're pretty heavily clustered in one part of town, this part here, which just happens to be where I live. And the reason I chose that particular part of town is because, as you know, I'm sure it's very difficult to get information distributed in that part of town, because it used to be the old city of York and had a lot of local organizations that would send out notices for you. But after amalgamation, a lot of those disappeared, and even the community newspaper, which used to be reasonably lively, the York Guardian, is kind of less read than it used to be. So it's just really difficult to find out local information in that part of town, and it's very difficult for local groups, like local volunteer groups, to promote their issues and make people locally aware of them. So the list has a kind of a funny dynamic in that this person over here, for example, has probably never received a single email from the list. And the reason is that nobody's going to go to the trouble of composing an email and sending it to a location where there's only one person. So most of the vast majority of the messages have been in that central area there. And I think, even now it's somewhat below critical mass. There's about 70 people in that cluster there, and it's still just marginally worth it for organizations to send out to. But I think once it reaches 500 or 1,000, it'll probably start to percolate. It's the number of subscribers has doubled in the last couple of months, so I figured about a year or so it'll be somewhere around that level. Well, the purpose of it is to create a common pool of subscribers that local organizations can draw on, because if you've ever participated in any kind of local campaign, you know, if you build an email list, like, for example, the streetcar right-of-way, Scrip built this big email list, and, after the end of the campaign, because of privacy issues, you can't share it, so it's basically gone, and all that effort goes down with it. But with this kind of thing that people can share this common pool of subscribers, and the subscribers have control of what they receive, and that if they don't want to get an email from a particular group, they'll just block them.
And that's it for this edition of the Social Tech Brewing Company podcast. To learn more about the next event and the organization itself, visit socialtechbrewing.org or check out the tag Social Tech on Flickr, Delicious, and other Web 2.0 sites. I'm Wayne McPhail. See you next time.